profiting from the adiaphora. Nevertheless, I have against you that you allow that woman Jezebel to teach and seduce my servants, to commit harlotry and eat things sacrificed to idols. Revelation 2, verse 20. When Micah in the Old Covenant displayed the rule of the house to the people, which was valid for the whole covenant circle, that in the covenant of grace all things are presented with the force and under the severe pressure of a lawsuit, then this lawsuit finds in the Old Testament proclamation of the covenant rules its echo and fulfillment in the New Covenant. It was then also Christ himself who, for this reason, expressed the severe seriousness of these lawsuits of God by word and deed to the congregations. He did this in the first beginnings of the Christian congregation and community by dictating on Patmos his seven letters to his prisoner, John, addressing them to the seven churches of Asia, and thus also to Thyatira. Without this understanding, the growing community of the new day could not come to its clear fruition. In Thyatira, this became very apparent. Already for a long time there had been a dispute in the congregation. On the regular times of the public feasts of the guilds, it was common to eat meat at solemn meals, which always appeared on the program as one of the most important items. This meat had first, in honor of the festive day of the guild, been used as a sacrifice in the temple of a false god. And in the evening, in the garden feasts, the wine and the noise would lead the people to ecstasy. It would often lead to a far too free behavior between men and women of the guild, or between boys and girls, by seducing them to do what is not to be mentioned. First, those guilds had been entirely pagan. But since there had come Christians among the members, protests had risen against these feasts, in the trade associations themselves, but especially among the members of the congregation. Part of them objected to eat meat at these annual feasts, meat that first had been given to the heathen priests for their offerings. Moreover, these people did not feel free as members of the church and of the guild to partake in these licentious evening festivities, or to allow their children to do so. That food did not seem good to them, nor that kind of life. However, another part of the congregation thought that such concerned brothers were spoiling their games within the organization, and considered them to be a little too particular in the church. For was the organization not neutral? Should they not distinguish between professional and ecclesiastical interests? Within the church, one had to become somewhat more tolerable. Such festivities were not that bad, for in regards to that food, an idol didn't mean anything. One could indeed imagine that complete rigmarole of idols independently from that otherwise perfectly ordinary meat. And in regards to that licentious lifestyle, Christian people should not cut off all communication with their fellow people, and neither with their professional associates. Did the Christians not stand in the freedom by which they were set free? To make things worse, the sect of the Nicolaitans came to add fuel to the fire by a very theoretical manner of reasoning. From accounts of their contemporaries, we get the impression that its leader, Nicolaus himself, indeed lived blamelessly, and his daughters also. Yet he would allow room for others who thought differently about these matters. Thus he coined the slogan of the adiaphora of food and life. That meant that all kinds of questions in regard to food, thus also the question of the eating of meat sacrificed to idols, and at the same time all such questions concerning life and way of life, had to be considered as belonging to the so-called adiaphora. Today we would translate this foreign word by, one knows it, that professional term, mediocre things. We mean by them such questions about which there is no explicit commandment, no particular expression in Scripture. In such cases we must leave each other free, because of the lack of binding stipulations. Now many had far too eagerly made use of this tolerable premise. They were quite happy with this reasoning, which after the fact seemed to supply them with a principled theory to defend their existing practice. To say it a little more distinctly, they benefited from the fact that there were mediocre things. Who could then deal with them? Which consistory would be able to resist them if they drew their circle of liberty as wide as they wanted? For indeed, there was no binding regulation, and this benefit of the existence of the Adiaphora went in the end so far that in Thyatira soon a woman arose who, if not with permission, at least with passive tolerance by the leaders of the congregation, sought to propagate and defend the theory of Nicolaus, and pressed the practice so far that her followers participated freely in the pagan sacrificial meals and in sexual licentiousness, behaving themselves very badly, even with her. This course of events in Thyatira should be a warning to us. When someone does not know in a particular case what the will of the Lord is, he should not make hay of that, but seek more eagerly to understand the correct interpretation of the Lord's law and word. He should not brutally and roughly oppose those who admonish to be careful. For one is not allowed to battle prudence, but should only resist incorrect interpretation of the law. He who refuses to deal with the question of the correct interpretation of the law, or seeks to find a fitting theory to defend his previously desired licentious practice, who thus tries to afterward cover his tracks with a pious-sounding theory, has proven by that he does not tremble before the law of the Lord, but lives imprudently, profits from the Adiaphora, and attacks the holiness of the covenant, which indeed places one in the climate of the lawsuits of the Lord. In every courtroom, corruption will enter irrevocably if a party, lawyer or judge, makes use of a self-willed interpretation of the uncertainty of the interpretation of the law on a particular point. He who just for a second considers the nature of justice in the covenant of the Lord with his people, will now understand why also in the covenant community, corruption will appear by benefiting from the presence of the Adiaphora. Even when one does not know exactly what God is saying, the first question should be what he thinks or wills. To ridicule that will, as soon as one is able, because of the absence of a single letter, results in the worship of the letter. And even worse, it is the changing of the covenant with God into a contract with an enemy, which one wants to deceive. Woe to him who treats his God as such an enemy, for there still is the 10th commandment.